It is a Friday on Scoops with DannyMac.com, and it's our chance to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And as always, we're presented by Henderson and Watercutty Law Firm right here in St. Louis. They're staying with us. They promised to stay with us for the long haul. We know these are tough times, but hey, no matter how big or small the offense that you may be dealing with, think Henderson and Watercutty, couple of guys from St. Louis, have done just a great job helping out many people in Missouri and Illinois, and see what they offer. They're available 24/7 at stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Ben Fredrickson, good Friday morning. How are you?
Good morning, man. I'm fired up. We got some good stuff to talk about today.
Well, we do. We have a lot of stuff. This time last week, we were waiting for baseball just to kind of make a move. Where were they? Well, now we know. We've heard some leaked reports about the economics, the fact that baseball could come back with, at least at this point, 82-game regular season. We've heard about maybe changes in the game with the DH and some of the things that are on the table. Just a general thought. Do you think, though, with all this momentum, that baseball at some point in 2020 is coming back?
It sure seems like it. And I really, you know, I'll say this. I can't imagine that either the owners or the players are going to let money get in the way of a chance to come back. Now, will they be able to get off the ground with the coronavirus? I don't know. But I think they will try until they're told they can't, or until the virus finds a way to stop things. I think both parties, while not in love with each other when it comes to negotiations and with the pressure of that next CBA looming after the 2021 season, I think there are probably enough reasonable voices in the room on both sides for them to realize, look, they can't let money be the reason they don't try to come back. Now, if they can't figure out the testing, if they can't get enough tests, if the players have too many concerns about what this could mean to their health, then that's a different conversation. And I think those conversations are going to be had, and we'll probably get into some of those today. But if it's purely going to be, you know, money, I think they're going to find a way to make this work. Now, the big question will remain with any of these leagues, whether it's baseball, hockey, basketball, college football, can they come up with a plan that is, you know, secure enough to withstand some of the problems that are going to become, you know, pop up along the way? What happens when a player tests positive? How do you get that player out and away from his teammates before it infects a whole team? Because if you have a whole team sidelined, then that's going to be where you're looking at, what are we doing here? So we don't have the answers to that yet. It's funny that those things, which are the biggest things, have not been leaked. We've heard a lot about the things that aren't the most important thing. But I do think that now we finally have something to talk about. There was nothing to talk about until owners said to players, what do you think about this? Now, it's going to take a while. There's going to be some give and some take, and there might be some fights. I would encourage both of them to realize that, you know, them bickering about certain things, most importantly money, is not a great look for the league when it comes to a country that is losing jobs, losing income, worrying about health, and would really just like to be able to turn on a baseball game and get some relief from it. That doesn't mean players should have to risk their health if they don't feel comfortable, but getting it in a fight between millionaires and billionaires, there's not a stomach for that for the American people right now.
No, there's not. And they're going to lose that in the court of public opinion, aren't they? I mean, that's first and foremost, what we're hearing is that people just do not want to hear about that right now.
And I get it. I also, you know, it doesn't mean that you can't have hard conversations about this, but they have to do everything possible to keep them from playing out in the public view. And I say that as, look, someone who wants to know, as a reporter, it's our job to find out everything we can. And I get people are interested in it, but baseball, I think, has already screwed this up to some degree. And I'll blame the owners for this. Their proposal to the players was public knowledge before the players ever got it in their hands to review. And that's not smart. When you have, you know, basically a move by the owners to say, hey, get this out there. Let's have everybody see it and get excited about the idea of baseball coming back when we know players are going to have some problems with this. It was an attempt to back players into a corner and an attempt to put public pressure on the players to accept the deal or be labeled as the bad guys who don't want to play. And I think while that may be good for PR, And history tells us that the public will generally blame the players when it comes to some sort of a work stoppage. I do think more and more people are saying, wait a second, we're going to get mad at the owners too. And really what it means is people are upset with the game of baseball. So I thought it should have been handled differently. And I think the big thing on top of the health is going to be the way they decide to split this salary. Not to go long-winded here, but there's a real fundamental disagreement about that March 26th agreement that was struck between the players and the owners on what would have been the first day of the season. The players felt like they agreed to a prorated portion of their salary, getting paid what they would be paid by their contracts for however many games played, which would ultimately result to about a 50% pay cut if they play 82 games. They're good with that. They're willing to do that. They thought they had agreed to do that. That's what they're saying. The owners are saying, wait a second, there's another part in that agreement that said we could revisit everything if we come back and found a way to play, but that way did not include fans in the stands. So we are able to now renegotiate this, and they want to do a 50-50 revenue split, which players in turn are going to say, well, that's even less money for us than we already agreed to. And players feel like that's a slippery slope toward a salary cap, something they've always fought to avoid, something that they fought to avoid the last time there was a work stoppage. You have a fair concern, a fair criticism on the player side of it says, look, when revenue balloons in this sport, the owners are not pitching a 50-50 revenue share then. So why would we accept it when it's being pitched when we know revenues are going to decline? And I think that's a fair criticism when there's been team sales that have generated massive amounts of revenue for the league and the owners. There've been media deals. There've been, MLB advanced media and the owners were not rushing to include the players in on that as well. So, what it speaks to more than anything, I think, is the startling lack of distrust there is between these two sides right now.
Blake Snell comes out and says, I'm not doing it. I'm not pitching for a reduced salary. He was on Twitch and explained himself. He said, we're taking the risk as players, and I'm not doing it. I'm just not doing it. I'm paraphrasing. What did you think of his comments?
I thought this should have been worded better, and I think players need to be smart about who's talking about this and how and in what forms and what they're actually saying. If you're not informed about this stuff, then what you interpret Blake Snell as saying is that he doesn't want to play this year. I think what he was saying was that he doesn't want to agree to the revenue share because the players have already agreed to play for what would ultimately, if the prorated salary is picked, is basically a 50% pay cut. So I think what he was saying is, I don't want to do the revenue share instead of that, but he didn't word it right. And it comes across as a lot of people saying he doesn't want to play if he's not going to get paid. So players need to be smart about who is doing the talking here. And I would encourage Blake Snell to really read up on what's actually taking place before he fires off comments like that. The other thing I think is important here is the fact that, it's fair to raise questions about the health aspect of this. I thought, here's an example of a player speaking out who I thought made some really good points, and he's going to face backlash because anybody talking about this is going to face backlash. But Sean Doolittle, for example, I don't know if you saw his comments on Twitter, but he said, look, here's where I'm coming from. He's got a wife who's got some health issues that would make her more at risk of coronavirus. So he's not thinking about, himself as much as what could I bring home and how could that affect my family, and here is why I want some more answers. And I do understand players who say, look, how is it that every aspect of what we get paid and what we don't get paid is national news before we hear this proposal, but there's not one, iota of information about how we're going to get enough tests to keep people from, getting this spread throughout the league. That's a fair criticism, because it certainly makes it seem like the owners are more worried about the bottom line than it is player safety. I'm not saying that's the case, but that's the way it makes it seem.
In terms of what may happen on the field, universal DH, you've written about it, got a lot of response to it. I've been talking about it a ton. Your thoughts on a universal DH?
Well, I'm one of the few guys in town who's pro DH, so I'm not taking a victory lap. And I understand and I hear people who say they don't want it. I get it. I mean, look, the National League is a beautiful game, and there's more strategy involved when you don't have the DH. But I've said all along, you know, we always talk about the strategy that will be lost. What about the strategy that will be gained? I mean, the easiest out in a lineup is the pitcher, and they're getting worse, Dan. I mean, pitchers are not getting better at hitting. They're getting worse, significantly worse. They had more strikeouts in 2019 than they have ever had, National League pitchers. So to me, I don't look at it as simply the strategy that's lost as to when do you pull your pitcher for a pinch hitter. I look at the strategy that's gained, that's adding one more competitive at bat to the lineup. You know, that to me is interesting. How does a guy navigate around a loaded lineup as opposed to having an easy out until the pinch hitters start coming?
Well, let me counter
that,
you.
That's go ahead.
Well, let me just counter it. What about pitching around the eighth place hitter to get to the pitcher? That strategy there too. What about bunting with the pitcher? That strategy, bunt and run. That strategy. I mean, I understand what you're saying, because I was saying the other day that if you have a pitcher there. Certainly, all those points that you're making are legitimate. But to the greater point, I made a counterpoint to myself, is that we have a lack of offense in this game, and it's glaring. And people are saying the game is boring because there's no offense. So put another bat in there, and you might get more offense. So I see it both ways.
I mean, we're all tired of strikeouts, right?
Yeah.
I think we can all agree on that.
Yep.
National League pitchers struck out more than 2,000 times last season, more than they ever have. I mean, that's not exciting. Now, there are some exceptions. Adam Wainwright can go up there and hit a ball out of the ballpark occasionally. And if a guy's that good of a hitter, you know, if everybody turns into Shohei Ohtani, then let him hit and hit for some, you know, use the designated hitter for somebody else. My biggest beef with this is not necessarily pro DH. It's the confusion that has existed in baseball for years, which that you have two teams, you know, two leagues that are playing for the same ultimate prize. And they're playing with such drastically different rules. I mean, this is a huge rule difference when you think about it. And, you know, it's really baffling that it's existed as long as it has. I would be just as much in favor of removing the DH from the American League. You know, my big thing has always been make it uniform, make it even amongst the leagues. Now, it's never going to go away because players would throw a fit, and players want it for the National League, and they have for a while. The thing that's changed, and no one talks about this, is that the National League owners have softened on it. It's not just like they're being browbeat into this. This was part of their proposal to the players. I think owners have realized that there is, to some degree, a competitive disadvantage from NL teams when it comes to certain types of players when you can't offer the DH spot. Certain contracts don't look as good if you don't have an ability to shift a guy to a DH spot later in his career. You know, you might be more willing to go get a JD Martinez if you have a DH place to put him. You might be willing to extend a young player whose skill set, you know, might in the field might fade a little bit faster if the bat's going to last. So I think there's been a real kind of softening among National League owners that doesn't get talked about quite enough. And then the other thing I'll add is this, and I get Cardinals fans are diehard National League fans, and I respect that. But you can look at this roster specifically with the Cardinals and see how the DH could help some issues.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, Tyler O'Neill is a walking DH. And putting him there with that power, getting him regular at-bats, would allow you to play Lane Thomas more. It would give you a faster track to seeing Dylan Carlson in the outfield. Another way you can do it is say, hey, you know, everybody wants to know where Tommy Edman's going to hit. Well, if Matt Carpenter hits and he can hit well enough to be your DH, which he has in the past, then you play Tommy Edman at third base every day and that problem's solved. So, you know, the Cardinals do have DH options, legitimate ones, you know, not just Jose Martinez, who they let go. I mean, this could help kind of sort out some of the roster jams on this team a little bit.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. Report coming out yesterday, the Rams are seeking up to $500 million in additional stadium financing. This has turned into a nightmare for Stan Kroenke and the Rams. And boy, there's so many things to dive into with this. The G4 fund, which St. Louis was trying to get, and the league was adamant, saying, no, can't do it. Well, they did it for the Rams. Now they're going to sink another $500 million into this thing. Just generally speaking, I mean, what do you think is the league's position on this would be, other owners, and just your thoughts on seeing that news that came out yesterday?
I was looking around my office here for I got the world's smallest violin here somewhere. I was going to pull it out and play a little song for Stan.
Some Kleenex. You need that probably
yeah,
too.
I'm just yeah. got to wipe a tear from my eye. I mean, hypocrisy in its finest, right? And I know that the lawyers who are keeping tabs on all of this for the relocation lawsuit are, I'm sure, making a note of this in their documents. I mean, you go back in time to when St. Louis pitched the Riverfront Stadium idea that hoped to keep the Rams in St. Louis. And the Board of Aldermen were ready to approve that financing package. You remember for that, what was then a $1.1 billion stadium on the riverfront. But they asked for an extra $100 million from the National Football League in that G4 funding. And immediately, Roger Goodell hit up Jay Nixon with that letter that really scolded St. Louis for pitching a plan that asked for more of that funding. And Roger Goodell said very sternly that, hey, there's a maximum of $200 million that can be given to help teams build new stadiums. You know, you cannot assume we'll give you more than that. It is, quote, fundamentally inconsistent with the NFL's program of stadium financing. And then you look at this report that comes out about what the Rams are requesting, and it's from Daniel Kaplan of The Athletic, who has done an amazing job covering all things of sports business, and he's really been on top of this story. The Rams are requesting up to $500 million in additional stadium financing, Dan. That's not the initial request. This would bring their total request up to $900 million for this SoFi Stadium. And of course it's going to go through because the NFL doesn't really have a choice. You know, they made a deal with Stan Kroenke and they view this stadium in Los Angeles as its crown jewel. But for those keeping track, this thing is now more than $4 billion with a B over budget in what it was supposed to cost to build it out there. And that's not all league money, obviously, but it's Stan's money. And now he's trying to dip back into the NFL's pockets. He's also, of course, paying for the legal fees to this point in the relocation lawsuit for the league. Stan's got a lot of money, Dan, but he's hemorrhaging a lot of it in this process. By the way, there's still construction going on at the stadium, which has had multiple construction workers come down with coronavirus. So you never know when that's going to be finished or what might get in the way there. On top of the fact that if it does open in time, which it's looking like it might not, you're probably going to be talking about a season that doesn't allow a full attendance because of coronavirus concerns in California. I mean, we're talking about a state that has already said it's not going to have students back on campus in the fall at many of its universities. I mean, this is a tornado of a bleep storm for the NFL and the Rams, and the money, the costs just keep climbing.
It's incredible. I got to wonder if I'm a co-owner, I would just wonder and love to get the truth of what they think about this now. I mean, what a nightmare this has turned out for maybe some of them, the league as a whole, the NFL, just what a nightmare this is. It's not a good look, period.
Well, there are already some owners who are, you know, starting to get annoyed by this lawsuit, starting to get annoyed by the climbing cost totals in Los Angeles, by the delays. And I don't think this is going to make it any better. And I surely think that, you know, Stan Kroenke's request for even more at a time when nobody's really trying to throw money around is going to be well received. Now they'll do it because I don't really know what their option is. But you know, now it's going to make every other team decide, well, hey, where's our help from the league? So I just wonder, you know, I wonder years from now what's going to end up happening with this story. And to everyone who just said, hey, the Rams are moving to LA to make money, and it's going to be a payday for the league, and they're going to roll on, and St. Louis can't do anything about it. This lawsuit's a joke. It's going to get dismissed. Well, it hasn't, and it hasn't been a revenue. It's been more than it's become a significant drain on the league with no end in sight. And the lawsuit, meanwhile, about how things were handled here in St. Louis continues to gain steam. And then there's stories like this, which once again will enable St. Louis to ask, well, what's different about the plan that we pitched, and why does, you know, how does this add up? The question's getting louder and louder, and I hope, you know, truly hope that one day somebody has to answer it.
I want to ask you too about staying with the NFL, but yet and a Mizzou tie. You wrote about Drew Lock today in the Post-Dispatch, and he's starting to come into his own, isn't he?
He's got a pretty good setup right now, Dan, and you know, nice little difference 1 year has made for Drew. I mean, you remember last year's draft, he was kind of a story on the disappointing side because his draft stock fell and he fell out of the first round, and the Broncos picked him, but you still didn't really know how that was going to work. They had Joe Flacco, Drew got hurt in the preseason, and then everything kind of flipped. He made those last five starts for them. They won four of those games, and it ever seems like ever since then, John Elway, who, you know, I was at that game, that last SEC game Drew played against Arkansas, where Elway was there watching him like a hawk, and it seems like you know, they're all in on each other. Elway spent the draft, you know, basically building an offense for Drew. You go get Jerry Jeudy out of Alabama. You get the fast receiver out of Penn State. They got a center. He picked up a running back and another offensive lineman through free agency. They even had Albert O, the tight end out of Mizzou that Drew had a great connection with. I mean, they have an offense right now that is as potent as just about any you're going to find. Now, unfortunately for the Broncos, they got to go against the Chiefs, which have, you know, the ring on their finger and the best quarterback in football. But I think Drew is poised to be, you know, has a chance to become the best NFL quarterback Mizzou's produced because of what's around him and the opportunity that's been given him. Now, that list is not long. You go back to, you know, Chase Daniel, who's had a great career but hasn't really gotten a chance to be a starter, has made a lot of money by being a really solid backup who's played well when given the chance. You go to Blaine Gabbert, who was drafted 10th but really put into a bad spot in Jacksonville and thrust into the spotlight before he had a team around him where he could do much damage. And Drew's got a chance to do something pretty special here, and it's nice for Mizzou because they're at a time where their recent draft stocks have taken a hit. And, you know, they don't have a lot of ambassadors in the league right now compared to what they used to. So having a guy be in the face of a team, a good team, would be a really good thing for the Tigers.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. Let's shift gears. NHL, what are you hearing about a startup of the National Hockey League?
Well, they've been more quiet than the baseball side in terms of news getting out. But I also think there's probably more, you know, more consistency, more goodwill between the players and the league. So you're probably not going to hear as much blow by blow. Look, I don't think there's any league that is going to not attempt to make some sort of a comeback. You know, NHL has so much revenue on the line for its playoffs. That revenue does get split between, you know, players and owners. So if baseball is going to try to find a way, I would have a hard time believing that NBA, that NHL aren't also going to try to find a way. But we go back to the big question. You know, we keep hearing again and again, hey, there's going to be enough testing, there'll be enough, but yet there isn't right now. So what's going to change between now and then? When can they you know, when can you start and have a full postseason? And what do you do if something, some kind of a snag is encountered? These are the questions that are going to have decent plans around them before we can get our hopes up too high. But it does seem like every week there's a little more to be optimistic about.
Which league do you think comes back first?
Oh, man.
I'm going baseball. Question. I think baseball.
Yeah, in terms of actual games being played, yeah. Or just like a, you know, because they're all going to have to build up again. I mean, hockey's going to have like 3 weeks of a training camp.
Well,
baseball.
One of these leagues has got to pull the trigger and just say, look, we're going to do it. We got an agreement with our players. We're moving forward. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then we know. And then we don't know what's going to happen for sports for a long time, potentially. But yeah, I think baseball would be it. Because to me, baseball is on the clock a little bit more than the other ones. If you're trying to get in, because I'm not so sure you're going to have an 82 game regular season. If they come to a revenue agreement, I would imagine we'd see more than 82 games. I do think that. And So you got a 3-week spring training, you know, 21 days, and then you fire it up and take it from there and try to get as many games you can in. And so you're fighting against the clock a little bit if you're Major League Baseball.
I think it's I'm going to guess, and this is just a guess, but I'm going to guess hockey, because, you know, I think there will be less friction. You know, I think baseball is going to take a while to negotiate through whatever it's got to negotiate through. I could see hockey kind of coming out of the blue here and saying, hey, here's our plan. We're rolling with it. So I'll guess hockey. NBA seems to be there. I mean, NBA has kind of set the trend in all of this. NBA was the first to shut it down. Maybe there's a chance NBA could be the first to come back. But I do think that if you look at the leagues, which will have the least pushback from players, the fewest question, I would guess hockey, because they also have the most, the most incentive to some degree to play, because those guys make the least money.
Yeah.
You know, that's something to think about too.
In terms of, and this is my final question, there's going to be live sporting events. I am not a NASCAR fan, but we're going to have NASCAR. We're going to have
might be now.
No kidding. you bet your, you know what. And there's going to be a golf match too that I will watch the golf. I love golf. So I'm just curious, you're going to watch some of these events and how they're presented on television with no crowds.
Yeah, if it's live, then I'll be watching, because it's better than the alternative. Now, I say that as somebody, I haven't quite gotten full on into the KBO experience yet, mostly because they started right about the time I'm about to pass out for the night. But you know, I was just thinking, I can't remember the last time I watched a race on TV. But
yeah, it was now, called Never.
Yeah, but now I might. I mean, why not, right? And to some degree, I think that's why there should be this incentive for some of these leagues to try to get going, because there's something to be said about being the first marquee sports league back in action. I mean, wait till you see some of the numbers on these
it's gonna be huge
golf tournaments and some of these races. So I think that will reinforce the incentive to try to find a way back sooner rather than later as well.
Hey, Ben, always good to talk to you. Lots to cover every week, and we'll catch you up next Friday on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Thanks, Ben.
Sounds good, man. Have a good weekend.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.